The president's under pressure to investigate high oil and gas prices.
And for that, he's sending in the attorney general.
Marketplace Midday Update is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. Happy Friday, and thanks for downloading the podcast for April 22nd.
Coming up on the program, why is everyone going for gold?
Also, Toyota's got a rough road ahead.
And what's in a name? If you're a realtor trying to sell a house in a certain neighborhood, a lot. One lawmaker wants to change that. All ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
This podcast is supported by Carbonite Pro Online Backup, the automatic backup solution designed for small businesses. Learn more at carbonitepro.com.
The price of oil has topped $112 a barrel today, and as the price keeps going up, gas prices do the same. And President Obama is being pressured to do something about it. So the president has ordered Attorney General Eric Holder and a Justice Department task force to look into the possibility of speculation as a reason for oil price volatility. Jill Schlesinger is editor-at-large for CBS Money Watch, and she's with us as she is every Friday from New York. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning.
Is there really speculation going on?
Yes, there's speculation, but it's not illegal. The oil market, like any other securities market, is made up of lots of players, including speculators. So in oil, we have two types. We have end users, like airlines. They use the market to protect against future price fluctuations. Mm-hmm. And then we have speculators, mutual and hedge funds, your neighbor next door who bought an exchange-traded fund, they're betting on the same price fluctuations.
All right, you say it's not illegal, Jill. What can be done to ease these major fluctuations of prices?
Well, you know, one thing that can be done is the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, the regulator, can impose what's called position limits. That limits the size of the bets that speculators can make. And the CFTC has the power to curb speculation. And the Dodd-Frank bill calls for a focus on position limits, and exchanges and regulators can also change margin requirements. That can tamp down the swings, but thus far, they haven't really done much.
All right. Jill Schlesinger from CBS Money Watch. Jill, thanks.
Great to be with you.
Gold is at a record high. It's trading at more than $1,500 an ounce amid worries about inflation. Let's bring in our regular Friday guest, Chris Lowe. He's chief economist with FTN Financial, and he joins us now from New York. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Chris, is all this gold buying rational?
Well, I don't know about rational, but people do have their reasons. And I think the primary one, when people buy gold, it's because it's sort of the last refuge from the dollar and things that are priced in dollars. And it's the thing that people buy when they're worried that policy in Washington is undermining the currency itself.
And Chris, I mean, is there a possibility that we could be headed for a gold bubble? The prices have really gone up very quickly.
Well, yeah, I think that's something you have to watch out for. If you look at, for example, the housing bubble, one of the reasons real estate was so attractive in the last cycle is because it was a hard asset, not a soft asset. It was something you could buy and then sell to somebody else later. And no one really thought about the possibility that it could go down. And a lot of that logic is evident in the gold market, too.
Well, we'll see what happens. Chris Lowe, chief economist with FTN Financial, thanks so much and have a great weekend.
Thank you, and you too.
Not much to mention in the numbers today. A lot of global stock exchanges are closed for the Good Friday holiday, but the markets in Asia that were open closed mostly lower.
Chipmaker Advanced Micro Devices, or AMD as it's known, said its first quarter revenue was up 2% year over year. Toyota is recalling 333,000 RAV4s and Highlander SUVs because of an airbag issue. And for more numbers, you can check out the numbers section. It's at marketplace.org.
This podcast is supported by Carbonite Pro Online Backup, the automatic backup solution designed for small businesses. Carbonite Pro automatically backs up computer files to a secure location with anytime, anywhere access from any computer or smartphone. Learn more at carbonitepro.com.
Now let's get to the marketplace global perspective. Chinese police arrested and broke up hundreds of protesters today in Shanghai. The demonstrators were truck drivers angry over high gas prices and the rising costs of doing business there. Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz reports the unrest is about high inflation and truck drivers are the ones feeling the pinch.
The protests are just the latest sign of the rapidly rising cost of pretty much everything in China. And Jeffrey Crothel with the China Labor Bulletin says he isn't surprised that it's truck drivers who are one of the first major groups to go on the offensive.
It's always the lowest paid workers, factory workers, people in the service sector, and truck drivers as well who are going to feel the effects of inflation first.
Crothel says the Chinese government is worried, too.
And they're trying very hard to try and improve the situation for workers by increasing the minimum wage.
Not only that, but this week the government announced it would stop collecting income taxes from people who make less than $500 a month, a possible sign that the government is nervous about inflation's impact on China's overall stability. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
Tomorrow marks 1 year to the day that Greece officially asked for Voithia, help, and requested a European bailout. It was the first Eurozone country to do that. The Greek anniversary coincides with a lot of talk about a possible restructuring of the country's debt this weekend. And some of that talk has triggered a criminal investigation. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us from the European desk to talk about it right now. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
So now the European debt crisis has turned into some sort of criminal caper. I mean, who's the alleged perpetrator here?
A trader at the London headquarters of Citigroup. He sent out an email this week saying there seems to be more market noise about the possibility that Greece will restructure its national debt as early as this weekend. In other words, the Greek government may announce it's not going to pay back all the money it borrowed. Now, this email became public and the Greek government reacted with fury. It accused the trader of spreading false rumours. It launched a police inquiry and has even asked Interpol to interview the trader here in London.
And what's been the response then from the business community, Stephen, and from Citigroup?
Citigroup seems bemused. I mean, the bank denies that the trader did anything wrong. And I must say the general reaction here is that the Greek government has overreacted to what has been the general buzz in the market over the past week. Martina Stivas is the London correspondent of the Greek Free Press newspaper, and she's critical of the Greek government's response.
I think what would be best is to have a convincing response to whether there will be a restructuring instead of engaging Interpol and shooting the messenger.
And it's worth remembering, Steve, that many of these heavily indebted governments in Europe have tended to blame traders and speculators for their woes rather than themselves for running up huge debts.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Stephen, thank you.
Okay, Steve.
Toyota said this morning its factories in Japan won't be operating at full capacity until the end of this year. Toyota has had to curb production because of damage to parts suppliers from the quake and tsunami. The BBC's Roland Burke has more now from Tokyo.
Toyota says its Japanese factories will start to ramp up production in July, and plants overseas, including the US, will see improvements starting in August. But even then, the company says it could take until the end of the year for operations to return to normal. It means until then, there may be shortages of some Toyota trucks and cars. The company's president, Akio Toyoda, says it's not just the damage from the March earthquake. Ongoing aftershocks are making it hard to rebuild.
Both domestically and internationally, we expect to normalize production to the same level as before the earthquake by November or December of this year. But there are continuous aftershocks, and all the work that we have done could get reset to square one again.
Toyota has already lost production of 260,000 vehicles since the quake, 35,000 of those in North America. From next week, U.S. car plants will be open only 3 of the 5 work days, although no layoffs are planned. In Tokyo, I'm the BBC's Roland Burke for Marketplace.
There's a big wedding a week from today, Jeremy.
Is there?
Maybe you've heard
Who's
of it.
Who's getting married?
Well, I don't know. It's a royal wedding. It's a big one. And it has some protesters of the British monarchy underscoring the need to get rid of the throne altogether and replace it with a more modern style of rule, one that doesn't cost quite as much money, as reporter Christopher Worth explains.
On a cold afternoon in London, about 40 protesters stand outside the gates of Buckingham Palace, calling for the Queen of England to pack up her bags and go.
I'm very, very proud to see a good turnout, and we're going to keep on protesting until we get rid of the monarchy, and we can one day elect our head instead.
These are Republicans, a term with a very different meaning in the UK, who want to see Britain's centuries-old system of hereditary kings and queens replaced with a democratically elected president.
I want to live in a democracy, as you do in the United States.
Tony Mitchell is a retired school teacher who came out for the protest, organized by a group called Republic. It says since the royal wedding was announced nearly 5 months ago, the organization has seen a 50% jump in its number of supporters. Many, like Mitchell, don't want the taxpayer to pay for it.
The Queen is one of the richest women in the world. She should foot the bill for the wedding.
To be fair, the royal family says it is paying for the wedding itself. But Graham Smith, Republic spokesman, says the British taxpayer is still on the hook for anywhere from $13 to $30 million in security and other related costs.
It's costing the country an enormous amount of money to have this wedding.
Not so, says Barry Twigg of the Constitutional Monarchy Association. It's a group that supports the royal family. He says overall, the total cost of having the monarchy is actually quite affordable.
When you work it out, it costs no more than 2 pints of milk per person per year.
In other words, about $60 million annually. But Graham Smith says when you add in other costs like private helicopters and the revenue the royal family earns and keeps from its land holdings, that figure is more like $300 million. And that expense will be even more scrutinized during this time of deep public spending cuts in Britain. From London, I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
Speaking of the monarchy, in Spain, the King's Cup, Jeremy, it's the Copa del Rey.
Yeah.
Have you heard
Copa
of this
Copa del
thing?
Rey.
Yes, the Copa del Rey is the national championship trophy given by the King of Spain. I think it's Juan Carlos, I believe.
Yeah,
Juan
that's
Carlos
correct.
The first, to soccer's best team. Well, this year, that team is Real Madrid, who beat Barcelona for the top football title. This happened, I think, on Wednesday. Well,
yeah.
Into the wee hours of yesterday morning now, they were partying in the central streets of Madrid. A huge crowd gathered, and defender Sergio Ramos held the trophy out of the team bus, held it up high to show the thousands of fans who showed up what Real Madrid had just done. And you know what happened after that?
Uh-oh.
He dropped it. He dropped the trophy as the bus was moving. He dropped it to where it fell in front of the bus. The bus then ran over the trophy and broke into many different pieces. So no more King's Cup. At least not the real one or the real one. Sorry. The Justice Department says BP has agreed to put $1 billion into coastal restoration projects in the Gulf of Mexico, projects like rebuilding marshes and barrier islands and conserving ocean habitat. A year after the oil spill, many things in the Gulf still aren't back to normal. And Marketplace's Adrian Hill has the story now of a famous Louisiana sandwich and the oysters that go into it.
The oyster po' boy is a New Orleans staple. And the sandwich, loaded up with fried oysters, lettuce, mayonnaise, and tomatoes, was in trouble after the oil spill. A year ago, I asked Charlene Zimmer, owner of Zimmer's Seafood, a New Orleans neighborhood restaurant, about the future of the sandwich.
No longer a po' boy. That's true. It's a rich boy now.
So I went back to see how and if the po' boy, rich boy oyster situation changed for Zimmer. She says for a while, things got really bad.
We've had oysters come from Texas, and at one point we stopped selling oysters because you could only get them from on the West Coast, and we didn't want to fool with that.
For about a month, she had to tell customers she was out. But now, nearly a year after the spill,
prices are still way up there high.
But oyster po' boys are back on the menu. All around New Orleans restaurants, shuckers are back at work, popping, scraping, and nestling oysters on the half shell into mounded piles of ice. And the city was getting ready to tout the oysters' return with a 340-foot homage.
Tomorrow, we're building the world's longest oyster po' boy.
Yule Smith heads the Louisiana Seafood Board.
It's 5,000 oysters, Louisiana oysters. So it's a heck of a sandwich. And we got 30 restaurants that helped to build that sandwich. So I've been asked, do we have enough oysters to do that? I'm like, don't worry about that. We got plenty of oysters.
Plenty of oysters, yes, but not nearly as many as before the spill. Smith says about half the oyster beds were wiped out by the spill in response when the state flushed fresh water into the Delta to keep the oil away. He expects it'll take 2 to 3 years for oysters to recover.
Now, our biggest challenge right now is more so perception at a national basis with the consumer.
He's working on letting people know that Louisiana seafood is safe to eat, a concern Charlene Zimmer says isn't a factor for her regulars looking to chow down on their favorite, though slightly more expensive, oyster po' boy. I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
Kind of hungry for an oyster po' boy right now, Steve, I have to admit.
Sound good.
Mattel, the company that makes Barbie dolls, has lost a major court case. Mattel's going to have to pay $88 million to a company called MGA Entertainment, which makes one of Barbie's biggest rivals. Marketplace's Janet Babin is here to explain all of this. Good morning, Janet.
Hey, Jeremy.
Well, first of all, tell us what this case was all about.
Well, it was really about who owns the idea that became the popular Bratz doll designs. Mm. And if you don't know, Bratz are those hip, cheeky dolls. They got the big heads and the pouty lips. And at the height of their popularity about 5 or 6 years ago, these dolls were huge. I mean, they made $1 billion in revenue for their owner, MGA Entertainment. And for a while there, they almost made Barbie irrelevant. And the Bratz dolls were designed by a former Mattel employee while he was still working on Barbie dolls for Mattel. So Mattel had claimed that it owned what this guy drew up. But the employee insisted, hey, he was drawing the Bratz dolls on nights and weekends, so Mattel didn't own them. And the jury here agreed with the designer that Mattel has no claim to the Bratz dolls.
And the jury not only sided with the Bratz owners, it also says Mattel has to pay Bratz $88 million in damages. How did that happen?
That's right. MGA, the Bratz owners, alleged that Mattel had engaged in corporate spying, actually sending moles into toy fairs and pretending to be vendors when actually they were spies working for Mattel. And the jury agreed. It found that Mattel had, in fact, stolen ideas from MGA. And that's where that monetary award comes from.
Marketplace's Janet Babin, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, the wildfires continue in drought-ravaged Texas. The state's governor, Rick Perry, has proclaimed today through Sunday days of prayer for rain. Perhaps no one will be praying more than the state's farmers, as Matt Largy reports from KUT Radio in Austin.
The past 5 years have been hit or miss for Texas wheat farmers.
We've seen two of the worst wheat crops, we've seen two of the best wheat crops, and we've had one that's average.
Mark Welch is an agricultural economist at Texas A&M University. The current drought isn't helping matters.
Well, this year is definitely not going to be a wheat year for Texas.
Steely Fishbacher is with the Texas Wheat Producers Board. She says most of their growing regions haven't had any real rain since September.
One bad year, you could probably make up for it, but if you had more than one back-to-back, that's going to be even harder to recover from.
That's largely because farmers try to manage volatility with crop insurance. But a few bad years and the insurance claims that come with them drives up premiums. It also drives down what insurance pays them for their losses, since that figure is based on their average harvest. Economist Mark Welch.
So in the good years, it helps to run the average up. But we get two or three of these bad years thrown in, it really pulls your production history down.
And with a couple of bad years already behind us, some farmers may be eating their losses come harvest time. In Austin, I'm Matt Largy for Marketplace.
And finally, Steve, let's get to the world of real estate. You know, here in L.A., if you can't afford to live in Beverly Hills...
And most of us can't.
That's true. You could maybe live in Beverly Hills adjacent.
Oh, the adjacent word,
yes.
Yes,
that's,
we love that
that's
word.
A fancy name that's been concocted by real estate agents to describe a less fancy neighborhood than Beverly Hills.
Even though you're 4 miles from Beverly
that's
Hills.
That's right.
You're adjacent to it.
Well, you know, in my old home of New York, same thing. If you can't afford Soho, what about So-So?
Oh, well, So-So.
South of Soho.
I don't know if I want to live in the neighborhood, though, called So-So.
It's just So-So.
It's just So-So.
But maybe you could live in Dumbo, then, which is the neighborhood that is down under Manhattan Bridge overpass.
Is that really a neighborhood?
That
Dumbo?
Is, yes.
They call
Dumbo.
It Dumbo.
Yeah,
Dumbo.
Yeah,
wow.
Absolutely. I lived right next to Nolita, which is north of Little Italy. So it really just goes on and on. Well, one Brooklyn lawmaker has had enough of all of this nonsense, and he thinks the whole thing is getting out of hand. He's writing legislation to punish realtors for making up neighborhood names just to boost sales.
We're going to see how far he gets.
Indeed. Well, in D. DTLA, Downtown LA.
There you go.
I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. This is the Marketplace Midday Update. Have a great weekend.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.